And now, Ariel Gore interviews Dexter Flowers about her spoken mic, which is emerging as the hot, queer, and queer-friendly spoken word venue in town, and her new zine release party for the show, Under the Sea. Coming up now, stay tuned.
Good morning. I'm Ariel Gore. I'm here today with Dexter Flowers, who is a Portland writer. You have been doing Dexter's spoken mic. How long have you been doing the spoken mic?
Well, I had an old spoken mic that I used to co-host with STS, who's another local writer over at Cup and Saucer Northeast. But I just started doing it over at In Other Words Books about, oh goodness, we've done maybe four or five different ones now.
So for a month or so at In Other Words, at their new location on Killingsworth. So thanks for coming by.
Thank you.
This is my first time interviewing someone on KBOO, and this is Dexter's first time on KBOO. So we're like kind of geeking out, but we're gonna, you know,
being very supportive of each other, though. We were, you know, taking deep breaths and everything, and.
So how come you decided to start the spoken mic in town?
I decided to start it mainly because when I was younger and I first started writing, well, not when I first started writing, but when I was really getting into my writing, especially when I was a teenager, there just wasn't very many outlets. I lived in this small kind of farm town, kind of hippie town / family town in Sebastopol in California. And there just wasn't a whole lot of outlets for young readers. And so when I came to Portland, I just really wanted to start something. Also, just wanted to start a place that was really comfortable for queer women and women in general to be able to come and feel empowered about reading and writing their stuff and make a community about it.
And you get a great mix of people in terms of new writers and established writers. And I like that, I mean, there's always, or the ones that I've been to, always a lot of women, super queer friendly, but also just a mix. There's everyone is welcome, is that right?
Oh, yeah, totally. That's one of my favorite parts about it. I feel like we get women of all different ages. And, yeah, totally. Women have brought their boyfriends with them before. And just read, like, the most amazing pieces. And I feel like that's what's kind of exciting about it is you have people who are, like, I don't know, maybe 18 whole show up sometimes. And then you have people in their 20s and 30s and 40s. And then you have sometimes women, like, in their 70s will show up. Like, I've seen.
So the spoken mic is the Witch and Witch Tuesday of every month?
It's the second and fourth Tuesday.
The second and fourth Tuesday of every month. And so the next one is going to be a week from today, Tuesday, June 13th, at 8 p.m. What, if people haven't read out before, like what makes a good spoken mic reading?
Oh, that's a good question. I think it really depends on what people like to listen to, but I know for myself, I can only speak from my personal experience. I like people who just kind of read from the, like, honesty, you know, people who, it's good to project your voice, I would say. It's something that kind of takes time because when you're a new reader, it's definitely very nerve-wracking to get up and read. But I think projecting your voice, making sure the mic is on, I think, you know, picking a piece that you're feeling pretty more comfortable with.
Right.
So, yeah. Definitely.
So do you find that people will come and listen maybe one time and then come back the next time to read or
you know,
jump in?
Something really great happens a lot is that I've noticed is people will come and they're not going to read because they were really nervous, and then they'll feel really comfortable at the open mic because everyone is so sweet and supportive and excited about each other's writing that often people will come up and wind up reading even though they hadn't planned to.
Right.
And it winds up being really great.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so sometimes you get a big group of people, sometimes a smaller group. Is there an average number of people who turn up?
Yeah, and sometimes we do have more listeners than readers, definitely. But, well, this one's still kind of starting up, but sometimes we've had ones with like 10 or so people. We've had last time we had one that was a writer's group that actually came that had all been writing together. And it was like 5 or 6 people. And we actually made like a circle on the stage and had this kind of poetry salon together. And it was really amazing.
Oh, cool.
It was kind of more low key than some of the other ones.
So you can morph the format to whoever shows up.
Right. And I mean, in the past, we've had some really filled out ones that, you know, like, especially when I had done it at Cup and Saucer for a while, we would have like, I don't know. I'm so bad with numbers. I'm like 15 people. I don't know. But
a nice little group of people. Yeah. And it's, I mean, you hear about it around town that it's that it's sort of the place to be. So that's exciting.
Totally.
So the next Tuesday, the 13th, at In Other Words, the spoken mic is not the only thing that's going on. You also have your zine release party, and you've got this new zine of memoirs called Maybe It's Something You Ate that I got a chance to read pre-publication. I was very honored. You write a lot about growing up in, I'm going to say, the counterculture, California.
Totally.
In, I don't know, what are we talking, 70s, 80s?
Well, I was born
sometime.
like the stories growing up. Mm-hmm. Well, actually, a lot of those are in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I was born in the 80s.
Right on. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's, I mean, with the California sort of hippie commune culture, it's hard to sort of peg it. It's somewhere between 1965 and 1985. It seemed really similar.
Blurs a little bit.
I'm older than you, but definitely come from the same place and the same world. And in fact, was the first story in your zine, you mentioned the dreaded goat unicorns of Ukiah.
And you're familiar with these unicorns.
I remember these unicorns, and it was so, it was so exciting that there were these unicorns, and they, you know, and then you find out that they weren't born like that. What has happened to these? How did they become unicorns?
Right. Well, yeah, it's interesting. And the first story, I actually wound up finding out about the unicorn goats because my mom, who's a single mom when I was growing up, was dating a man who lived on a commune who had been working with the unicorn goats. And basically, they take the horns and they tie them, I think, with some kind of twine or rope, and they basically get forced together when they're babies, and it's like over time, like they get pushed more and more together until they're intertwined.
And I mean, it's controversial. It's said that this doesn't hurt the goats, and some people really think that it's great that these goat unicorns exist. But Dexter and I had the same experience of being mildly to a little more than mildly horrified. anyway, I was maybe more horrified.
It just took the magic out of it too. Not only was it kind of sad, but it was also like one of those like childhood heartbreaking moments because you think there's this real unicorn that you can go and meet, you know, and it was no such luck.
I know, it's sort of like when I took my daughter to the zoo one time when she was really little, and we spent all day there and we had seen all the animals and we were about, and I was like, okay, you know, it's time to go home. And then she started crying and she was like, but we haven't seen the dinosaurs yet. Oh. And there has, you know, there's that huge culture of like Bernie the dinosaur and like kid culture of like these dinosaurs as if they're, you know, not only not extinct, but sort of very cartoony and friendly. And she thought that like Bernie the dinosaur was going to be in the zoo. And it was very sad.
Oh, that is sad.
But so would you... do you want to read something from your
zine
for us?
Definitely.
In the spirit of Dexter's spoken mic.
Yeah.
Do you need this?
Yeah, that'd be great.
What do you want to read?
Well, I guess I'll read the second story in the book. The first one is all about it talks about the unicorn goats and the commune and being 12 and not being so happy that my mom's dating someone new and that kind of thing. And then this is the second chapter about my mom's new boyfriend moving in with us. So I guess he wasn't so new of a boyfriend at this point, but all right, it's called We'll Eat You Up, We Love You So. The day Terry's U-Haul showed up was an exciting day for my mother. We're finally going to have a nice little home of our own, and our little family would now include a father figure. I was less than thrilled, chewing my nails with my frizzy hair falling in my face, like Ally Sheedy in The Breakfast Club. The house was perfect, just what we wanted. A little white house on top of a hill with a humongous pink tea rose bush covering the front window. The fact that it was on top of a hill meant that the most beautiful sunsets possible were always visible. The house also gave me a faux illusion of being a farm girl. There was an expansive field with sheep and goats frolicking about and an oversized pen of angry, hissing geese. They came with the house as if the landlord had concocted some spectacular plan to attract city folk who were ready to lead the farm life without the initial work of having to set it all up. One time, the big black sheep that my mom had named Penelope fell ill. She suddenly couldn't move her legs and was stuck in her barn. I was in seventh grade, so naturally I would go sit and tell her all of my junior high drama. How hard it was to be in a new school, stories of unrequited love, etc. She'd sit and sigh heavily. In retrospect, it was pretty cruel unleashing my preteen angst on poor Penelope, who couldn't move her legs to escape. Yep, I was a real farm girl. There were many theories as to why Penelope couldn't move. She'd broken her legs or had a stroke. Who knew? I did. Penelope's pregnant, I concluded one day, as if I'd worked at Planned Parenthood as an intern. Terry then inspected her, and he being a goat expert because of his experience farming the goat unicorns, made an educated diagnosis and insisted Penelope was not pregnant after all. Penelope didn't get better after a week, so Terry and my mom brought in an animal psychic communicator. After talking spiritually to Penelope for a good half hour, being paid probably 30 or 40 bucks, the psychic emerged the barn calmly stating that Penelope was emotionally distraught, and that's why she refused to move her legs. It was a choice resulting from her disdain for life. She was feeling stagnant and afraid of change. Imagine our surprise when Baba the Black Lamb was born 2 days later. I knew it, I exclaimed, feeling superior. I knew Penelope was pregnant. The day Terry's U-Haul arrived, the geese squawked with intense anger, their blue eyes scolding. The U-Haul seemed a little large for one hippie man moving only himself. Hi, Terry smiled, his eyes unnaturally wide and beaming. He popped out and on the gray gravel road. He put his hands on his small legging-clad hips, knees bending and cracking. He breathed a sigh of relief. His eyes pointed on the field of sheep with a look that meant, I'm home. My mom threw her feisty arms around him, smiling with all her teeth, and gave him a kiss on the cheek that made me groan and scowl. Don't get me wrong, I was excited to finally have a home. Me and my mother had spent the summer in tents in her friend's backyard, at women's festivals or hot springs and guest rooms, and now we'd found a place that was cute and affordable in my mother's dream town of Sebastopol, California. Unfortunately, it came with Terry, and I'd gone long enough without a solid father figure, and I thought there was no way I should start having one now. I'm finally here! Hi, Rhiannon, he said in a gentle tone and gave me a small hug. Terry had come with a sizable set of furniture. He'd begun to unload it, my mother helping, me hiding in my bedroom for as long as I could get away with. It wasn't long, maybe an hour, before I heard a knock on the door. My mom came in looking flushed and exasperated. Sweetie, it's so horrible. What? I said, jumping up and turning Ace of Base off on my boombox. The furniture! She then led me into the living room. There was a shabby old love seat with discolored green velvet blotches on it. It was also covered with doilies. Three big, ugly chairs, two of which my mother informed me we couldn't sit on because they were broken. But someday, Terry planned to fix them, just as he'd also planned to reupholster the couch. They were also strewn with various doilies, only accentuating the hideousness of it all instead of concealing it. This man owned more doilies than both my grandmothers combined. I could see the tears of disappointment welling in my mom's brown eyes. My lips quivered. I couldn't hold back. We both began to uncontrollably cry, hugging each other. Our beautiful little house, she whined like a four-year-old between sobs. I know it sounds dramatic, but in comparison to the cute flower-specked motifs I'd grown up with, this was a shocker. My mother had assumed that the tasteful furniture in Terry's old house was his, when in reality it belonged to his second S-wife, Deidre. She'd refused to have even a single chair of his crash through her feng shui living room. But luckily for Terry, he'd met my mom, and he saw it as his chance to release all his hidden treasures that he longed to display for years and years. And he was proud, so proud, because these pieces were genuine vintage. He was able to see them for what they once were, classic and darling, though their beauty had faded to unrecognizable and depressing. The stunning realization that Terry had no taste was just too much for my mom to bear, and it only got worse. We were also surprised to find that Terry had about two or three more trips to make before we'd have the privilege of all his stuff. It became like new waves of terror every time he'd leave for a day and come back with things more hideous than the last. My mom and I would tense up and shrug like we were about to be struck on the head whenever we'd hear the geese announcing Terry's arrival. Next came his cactus collection. Though my sunburns would someday be grateful for his flourishing aloe plant, the rest of the cacti strewn everywhere in the house made me feel like I was marooned in a tacky desert. An alliance formed between me and my mother, not unlike the dynamic that often happens in roommate situations. Since we had the common loathing of Terry's stuff, he instantly became that roommate that had that really annoying thing that we gossiped about when he was gone. Then the day came when Terry went too far. I wish I had documented it in photographs because there's really no way to properly describe what it looked like. He stacked all but maybe 30 stuffed animals all over the furniture. Teddy bears with one eye, weathered bunny rabbits, unicorn toys, lions, walruses, and whales. They had once belonged to his then 24-year-old daughter. But the most intrusive fluffy friend was an enormous full head mask of a monster from Where the Wild Things Are that Terry proudly stated he'd made himself. It had huge horns, a big furry head, and glow-in-the-dark eyes the size of prize-winning lemons. It lived on top of one of the untouchable chairs so that it stared at eye level if you had managed to make enough room amongst the stuffed animals to sit down on the love seat across from it. It was a wild forest, and the animals came first. There was a sense of panic in the house. How would my mom's goddess statues fit in here? Would we get yoga mats and resort to sitting on the floor to make room for the menagerie? My mother wasn't going to have it. She told Terry straight up that stuffed animals had to go. This wasn't taken so well. My mother was trying to suppress Terry's artistic expression. Those stuffed animals were sentimental. Besides, they were cute. And as for Wild Thing's head mask, he'd made it. It took him weeks to craft it together, and now we wanted him to get rid of it all? What? We must be out of our minds. Wasn't this his house, too, even if my mother paid the rent? Would he ever diss her things? No. My mother calmly stated that this was because her stuff was nice and tasteful. The stuffed animal controversy lasted a couple of weeks until we ultimately won, and the little bodies of lifeless beasts were packed away and stored once again. Like a compromise with a small child, he was allowed to pick two of his favorites, the walrus and the elephant, who both had babies. So in fact, there were four couch surfers left, which my mother and I would kick off out of spite. That caused Terry to storm into the room and pick up his little family protectively, exclaiming, "These don't belong on the floor." The monster mask, on the other hand, was moved to live behind the hallway door as some sort of second compromise. Lurking, waiting for me in the night, its glowing eyes causing me to run juvenilely to my bedroom for the next 2.5 years. The furniture would have to go too, of course, but that had to come later. Until then, we would share the love seat, secretly biding our time. Thank you.
Dexter Flowers reading from her new zine of memoirs called Maybe It's Something You Ate. I have to ask you the classic memoir writer question, which is how do the folks that you write about tend to respond? Your mom in particular, because other characters you may be able to disguise, or maybe you're not, they haven't picked up your zine.
Right.
But how does your mama feel?
You know, I started reading my mom a lot of the stuff about the unicorn goats and Terry, and I'm actually writing a lot about my mom's boyfriends when I was growing up and about father figures in general. But she, to answer your question, she actually can't really deal with listening to the stories about that time because it was kind of maybe not the happiest time for her, or it's just the memories are kind of not, you know, something she wants to relive again is how she explained it to me. So we've kind of worked out a system where I don't read her particular stories because she just doesn't really want to hear them. Not because she doesn't think they're well written, but just she's, you know.
Sure. Yeah. But she doesn't have a problem with you putting them out in the world.
I don't think so. I think that especially like I'm definitely I don't feel like I put her in a bad light so much, especially as the stories go on. I definitely think pretty highly of my mom, and I think she knows that. And
that's what I love about your kids' stories is that they're funny, and some of them are super alarming, but they're written with a great deal of love, even for some of the people that, as readers, we may or may not love. There's a certain love of humanity in them that makes them the funniness really is. More often at your own expense, like the jokes are,
right. You
know, more often self-deprecating, and then everyone else gets laughed at too. But well, that's one thing I love about your stories. Oh, and your mom's a writer herself, right?
Yeah, she is. She wrote a book called The PMS Conspiracy when
Excellent.
I was growing up. she's been doing a lot of performance art. She wrote a piece called, it's really interesting because we both wrote about our experiences growing up as women and having breasts at different ages. And I wrote a story that's actually in my zine. But she wrote a performance art piece called Titty Talk that she's been performing at poetry slams. And she's actually been winning quite a few poetry slams over in Hawaii.
Right
so,
on.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
Definitely. She's been supportive about writing for a long time.
And so is she going to come to Dexter's spoken mic anytime?
Oh yeah, she's going to be coming here for the summer most likely, and maybe kind of moving to Portland for a little while, and we were talking about dreaming up maybe doing some performances together.
How exciting.
Yeah, definitely.
That seems like it's going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So your zine release party and the spoken mic both happening next Tuesday, June 13th at 8 at In Other Words on Killingsworth. Sarah G's art reception also that night. What about that?
She is an amazing artist. She's a really good friend of mine, and I totally love her. And she illustrated my zine and did the cover art and everything. And so we kind of thought it would be cool to release my zine along with her art reception. She's going to have all of her art hung up at In Other Words. And we'll have cookies and snacks and, I don't know, juice, maybe wine. I don't know. We'll see. You know, definitely milk or soy milk. I don't know. It depends.
Right. Excellent. What else does everyone need to know?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, that you're welcome to bring your writing pieces, your performance art. We have a piano. I would like to ask for no guitars unless it's going to be like accompanying some kind of spoken word piece. I'm definitely kind of gung-ho about not having guitars at the open mic too much. So
no guitars at
right.
the open mic. If people want to prepare something to read, what's a good length of a reading to shoot for?
That is a really good question. I think it's good to maybe bring a couple pieces just in case. If there's not very many people, 10 minutes sometimes can be all right. But you want to try to shoot for under 10 minutes, like between, you know, I don't know, anywhere from however short you want it to, you know, 5 to 10 minutes or
there you go. And so, you know, just rehearse your thing, time it, see if you're running 5 minutes or so, and bring it on over and listen to the other readers, even if you're not really sure if you're going to read, just sort of tuck it in your pocket. And,
oh yeah. You can, or come with nothing in your pocket. I mean, maybe you just want to come and enjoy the event. Like I really appreciate people who just come and really just like being there and supporting their friends or seeing new readers.
Yeah, and some of the best new writers in Portland are reading at your events. So
definitely.
It's, even if you're not a writer yourself or a performer yourself, it's the place to listen to all the new stuff that is being put out there, memoir stuff in particular, but all kinds of things. I've heard poetry and short fiction pieces there, so all kinds of
oh yeah,
of everything. Like that.
Very exciting.
I don't know. We got a couple more minutes. Anything that we should add?
Let's see. I'm trying to think. what shall we talk about?
we can just wrap up.
We could wrap up. Totally. I am really excited to read and hear all of the amazing work that's been coming through town. And really hope that people come check it out.
Okay.
Definitely.
Cool. So thanks for talking to me this morning.
Thank you so much, Ariel. This was great.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. Stay tuned for Stage and Studio.